Welcome back into Gwynn and Chris 501 on the clock. It is the happy hour. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Sello, Matt Scraby, talking some Padre baseball. I guess really the first bit of big news to come out of camp. Xander Bogaerts will move off of the shortstop position over to the second base position. Ha-Sun Kim will move off the second base position over to the shortstop position. And that's all assuming Manny Machado starts the year healthy and as the third baseman.
I saw somebody, I think it was actually on MLB Network, Tony, they projected the Padres opening day, you know, lineup, and they actually had Matthew Batten playing third base and Machado DHing. You know, we haven't heard a lot about that. I mean, Batten finished up at third base when Manny was hurt
Batten
last year.
Did a nice job with his
little
bit of
time. Didn't do so bad. Maybe he will get the... Korea's going to be a different deal than opening day because Korea's 2 weeks or 3 weeks before opening day.
Yeah.
When's Manny going to be ready?
Here's the thing. I guess that makes more sense because if Manny does start as the DH and Kim does move over, you have answers at third, short, and second. You know where you don't have an answer? It's first base. Whereas I think batting at third base is a better fit than what, batting at first? Because I see him much better as a third baseman than I'd see a first baseman.
Yeah, I think so.
So maybe that is accurate in what we saw. But the news of the day, Xander Bogaerts has decided to be the team player on here. He's going to move to second base. Kim's going to get to start at shortstop.
He decided to be, but I think as you'll hear in the clip, Daddy, you know, he's a gamer, and he didn't want to give up his spot easily, but he was willing to give it up.
It seemed to be a tough pill to swallow.
What are your feelings on your switch?
I mean, I signed here as a shortstop, you know, but to me, I just live and die baseball, you know, and I felt like we had this conversation early in the morning, and I was like, listen, man, if this is the way that you guys view the team is better, I respect him, especially defensively. I actually admire him a lot. So maybe it can hurt, but I mean, I'm just doing it in the best interest of the team. And in the end, I feel like I'm at peace with moving off, you know, because I felt like if I literally didn't really want to, I would have just let them know. And that would have been I wouldn't say a problem, but it might have been tough situation, but I think I'm really at peace of gonna have to move off, you know. So I think that deep down in my heart, like, I was actually cool with it, you know. I didn't expect maybe to be cool with it, but what more can I accomplish in this game, you know? I came here, the only reason I came here was to win a World Series, so if this is the way that we're gonna get one, so be it, you know. I was just thinking, I want one at third base, I want one at shortstop, and it would be very nice to win one at second base. So I'm looking at the positive, and actually, if we're going to have this conversation in like 2 years, hey, let's move you from here, from the position again or whatnot, like, let's just get out of the way now. You know, if this is a really good time for that, our team is going to be much better this way, let's just do it, you know?
Yeah, as you saw, it wasn't like an easy turnkey situation here. Certainly, you could hear his what would you describe
hesitation.
Yeah, okay.
You could hear a little bit of unhappiness in there, but I mean, we said earlier, definitely chose his words, you know, carefully, and but that's fine. I don't want my starting shortstop to just say, hey, here you go, take my position. To be honest with you,
no.
So I'm okay with that, and you know, let's just let it play out. He's a pro; he'll play second base. He's got the spring to figure it out. I'll tell you one thing that I don't want to hear from the Padres is like in mid-May saying, you know, Xander is going to take him a little time to get up to speed at second base. I mean, my point is it's your decision to move him there.
Right.
So let's just live with whatever he does there. It's kind of, I say this all the time, and you can probably correct me, but whenever they say a guy makes a rookie base running mistake, they're a rookie, and they make a base running mistake. I'm like, yes, but the guy's been playing baseball since he's been 9 years old.
Yeah.
To me, it shouldn't be you shouldn't get the benefit of the doubt because you're a rookie. So Xander Bogaerts, to me, is going to have to go out and really play a good second base because I don't want to hear that he's not getting the job done. This was your decision, and prior to moving him, both guys were getting the job done. But the thinking analytics is that Ha-Seong Kim is going to cover more ground at shortstop. So you may have to live with a couple of mistakes from Xander Bogaerts at second base.
Yeah, I mean, I would expect there's going to be some growing pains there,
sure.
Right? Like, it's not just going to...
It's not going to be a perfectly smooth transition.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It's a different position. Although maybe he'll do what Fernando did. Went to right field, won the gold glove. Maybe Xander will go get the gold glove.
It's certainly within the realm. I mean, you know, it'll be an interesting situation, like you said. We'll see how it goes. I think Xander, as I said, he's a pro, so he's going to handle it. Mike Schilt was asked about.
I was coming up with a new clip. I was coming up with a new clip because you guys said...
All I could see was out of the corner of my eye is hands flailing everywhere.
Uh-oh. He's giving you signals again?
If...
Scrape, you'd be the worst third base coach in history. If a guy came around second base and saw your signals, they'd just break his own ankle trying to determine what you're asking them to do.
What do you want to say, Scrape?
Are you done yet? You guys were talking about him winning a gold glove at second. Well, he said he would do something if he did win a gold glove at second.
Team that have moved positions in the last couple of years that have had a lot of success at their new positions, he's right, Brunner, Kim. But does that give you confidence in moving to a new spot?
I feel like they might be playing a tricky situation with me because if I win a gold glove at second, I might retire. You know, so I'm like,
he was joking, but yeah, there you go.
By the way, we had some people in the chat earlier who were saying, you know, that now with the money that Xander Bogaerts is making, he's too expensive to play at second base. I would answer that and did when talking with these guys. But Mookie Betts has also been moved to second base. He's making a lot more money than Xander. Wait a minute, Scraby's waving again.
Did you not like what I just said? People that.
Well, they can see it on the YouTube stream.
Yes, they can see it, but the YouTube stream is getting a behind the scenes look at what we're doing. But I still want to be like a respected producer.
Yeah, no, Mookie Betts is by far the highest paid second baseman in all of baseball.
Okay,
what is it about? He's getting about 35.
He's about as high a played player as there in the game,
yeah.
Isn't he?
Mike Schilt was asked how this change came about.
Wait a minute. How did you determine that's what he wanted you to do by his hand signals?
Well, I think I got his hand signals down
pat
at this point.
Look at him.
Maybe not.
He's getting mad.
I'm not getting mad at all, okay?
You're like George Costanza. Scraby's right. Getting angry.
Here it is. Wait, that's not it.
Guess I didn't have his hand signals down.
Here it is.
I had a starting point of the conversation with him to take his temperature in Aruba. Pretty good place, by the way, to have a conversation of any kind. And so we started the process there, and then you know, AJ, clearly you can ask him as well. But, you know, it was an ongoing conversation, and, you know, we finalized it recently.
You know what you're going to get from Kim at shortstop because he's played there before, but what are your expectations given Xander's skill set for what he can do at second base?
Well, the good news is, you know, you want as many shortstops as you can have on a baseball field in as many positions as you can have. So to the examples I mentioned earlier, we got – Toddy, the shortstop that goes to the right, great. Kimmy's shortstop goes to second, fantastic. Crony has played shortstop and goes to second and first and has been really good. So, you know, if you can have as many shortstops, and the experience of that is, you know, from understand how to play the middle to go to second is really important. So, you know, I expect it to be some transition, some learning curve, clearly. I think we'd all be naive to think that won't be the case. But also, you know, with Bogey that we'll make sure of, and he'll do in any way, is he's still a captain of our infield. He's still a guy that's going to run point guard, you know, from the second base position about how we're operating, how we're competing, how we're aware of game situation on the field.
Mike, was there any thought moving Jake to second and Bogey to first? What was part of the calculus there?
I mean, listen, you know, again, we've got a different different ways, Palms, to look at this. But, you know, Bogey came in here to be a shortstop. He's a valuable guy in the middle of the field. Crony's already demonstrated he's really good at first base. So I don't think we want to – let's keep Bogey up the middle where he's clearly done very well. And as I alluded to with, you know, talking to AJ in his question, you know, it's a guy that you know, we want to continue to have in the middle for his baseball IQ and his leadership.
This is, to me, where I think Mike Shildt has this is his strong suit, is getting guys to buy in on things that they don't necessarily love in some ways. Xander's, that's just one element of it. I think the other thing that you're going to eventually see is Fernando Tatis Jr. in terms of, you know, the one of the leaders that he talked about in terms of this ball club. I think you see Fernando step into a bigger role in that, from that element.
I saw the MLB top 100 rankings. Somebody sent me a piece of that today, and they had the list of number 30 through 20. I don't think they've gotten to number one yet. Maybe
I don't think
they've revealed that yet. But I saw Manny Machado ranked 24th best major league player. On the surface, I'm okay with that. I saw Fernando ranked 26th. On the surface, I'm not okay with that.
You're not okay with
that. No! 26th best player in baseball? And don't tell me, you know, it was because of what happened, this, that, the other. This guy's talent, his power, his speed, his ability in offense, combined with the fact that he was the Platinum Glove Award winner last year, tells me, and based on what I think he can do this year, he's a lot higher than 26.
Yeah, but it's not based on what you think it is, based on what he did last year.
That's it?
That's it.
I still think he had a pretty darn good season last year.
I don't know.
I want to get, because I did this last night. I went through some of the names to see if he was better, but one of the names that was on the list was Kyle Tucker. Is Fernando better than Kyle Tucker?
If we're going off, so this is how good Fernando is. Look at Kyle Tucker's year last year. Look at what Luis Roberts, who he's one spot ahead of. Look at his year last year.
Luis Roberts.
And then look at Tatis's year.
Luis Roberts had a 5 WAR, 264, 38 home runs, 857 OPS.
Tatis is ahead of him in the ranking.
Tatis is ahead of him in the ranking.
I just can't believe there was 25 guys who had a better year than him last year. I guess there was. All right, I'll give MLB Network the benefit of the doubt.
For this year.
But I don't like to give them the benefit of the doubt because they still employ Brian Kenny.
Oh, my gosh. I'm with that. I stamp that approval.
Yes, thank you.
I really want to get these names before we go to break, just so I can talk to you guys about them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you looking up the top 30?
Ah, there we go.
We found them.
Blake Snell's number 30. So we have Fernando at 26.
So that's a Cy Young.
Yes. We have Corbin Burns, 29. We have 28 is Runner Zach up. Wheeler.
So how did Corbin Burns finish out of Blake Snell?
I don't know. That's a good point.
I mean, what happened there?
I guess the walks got him down to 30.
I mean, was Blake Snell not voted the better pitcher than Corbin Burns by a landslide vote?
Yes. Zach Wheeler, 28. Luis Robert Jr., 27. 26. 25 is Francisco Lindor. You could flip Fernando and Francisco Lindor.
You can put Fernando way ahead of him. But anyway, yeah, that's all right.
I agree. Tony, you have any thoughts about Lindor?
He's a very, very, very good player. Good.
Manny Machado, number 24. Kyle Tucker, 23. Altuve, 22. And Marcus Semien, 21.
I mean, listen, you could pick apart this list. I mean, Manny at 24, he didn't have his best season. He's still ahead of Fernando. Yeah. He's a bit ahead of the Cy Young Award.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know that they're exclusively going in what they did last year.
They may not be.
Because if they're exclusively going what they did last year, Blake Snell has to be ahead of Corbin Burns and Dan Wheeler, Zach Wheeler, guys that he beat out for the Cy Young. So
it's fair.
You know, I'm going to have to put Fernando's got to be top 10, top 15. I think that's sounds like a homer call to some people.
If we're being fair, I don't know if you could say Fernando was a top 10 player last year.
I didn't say last year. I'm saying he is a top 10 player.
I don't right now. I don't disagree with that.
And I thought their list was top 100 right now, but I don't know. Brian Kenny's capable of screwing that up in any number of ways.
Let's get to break for Brian Canning catches more strays before
he's
the show.
He's going to put a cease and desist on our show at some point. I swear.
I would love for him to get to hear some of this stuff.
That would be great for our show, actually, if he put a cease and desist.
I know who would co-sign on that. Joe Musgrove.
Indeed. Let's get to break. More Gwynn and Chris on the other side. Here's some traffic.
Now the NBA floor is on fire. I mean, this is incredible what they're doing with this floor. You gotta tune this in, the NBA Celebrity All-Star Game with the LED floor.
I thought he would hate
it. It looks pretty sweet, man.
It really looks amazing. It looks, it's what I imagine.
Was glass. That's what I saw. That's right. What I was thinking.
It's what I imagine watching a basketball game on Nickelodeon would look like. All kinds of flashing lights and crazy colors. That's fun. I don't know that I need it for a regular season NBA game, but it's perfect for the Celebrity All-Star Classic.
Yeah, I don't know if I want it for an NBA regular season game.
I still kind of want to make the game the most important thing.
I agree.
Right now, the floor is the most important thing. Speaking of floor, tonight at Viejas Arena, San Diego State and New Mexico will be on that floor. The player you want to boo wears number 10 for New Mexico, and he wants you to boo him, Jalen House. According to the Albuquerque Journal, the most hated player in the history of college basketball. He burned the Aztecs in the first meeting, though. 26 points, single-handedly turned the game around and let the Aztecs know about it.
I have a feeling he's going to get a little taste of the show.
He'll be waiting for it because you said earlier some guys just like this stuff.
No doubt.
And he appears to like it.
It's easy to like it when you're winning and your team and you're playing well.
Yes, let's hope that the Aztecs punish them and therefore quiet him tonight. I saw Jay Billis's rankings, by the way, the Billustrator.
How's Billis treating us?
Billis is treating us okay.
Okay.
Not as well as I had hoped. He has New Mexico 20th, and he has us 27th. So he's got New Mexico a few spots ahead of the Aztecs, actually.
Ain't nothing like a San Diego State beatdown
to
change that up.
Time for us to change that opinion from Jay a little bit. Aztecs still come in, though, at number 5 in the bracketology. 5 seed.
What was our seed last year? 6?
5.
Oh, was 5 last year, too?
They were 5 last year. So 5 would be good. You know, they need to win, right, tonight because there's still a game back at Utah State. Utah State plays Colorado State in Fort Collins tomorrow. I would think Utah State loses that game. That would give the Aztecs a tie for first place. And then next Tuesday, they play at Utah State. It's still going to be really hard to win the regular season title. You almost can't lose another game if you're the Aztecs. In that regard,
this tournament, this Mountain West Conference tournament this year is going to be bananas.
Real. The top 7 teams, any of them could win it. And that goes all the way down to UNLV.
Yeah.
Which means if you're the number 2 seed, you're going to draw the number 7 in your first game. And that is going to be somebody like UNLV or maybe even Nevada.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the very tough draw in the very first game.
It almost makes winning the conference outright very important.
You'd almost like to be number 1 so you get the 8-9.
Yeah, for sure.
Which might be a little bit of an easier draw. Aztecs, to me, are still having an incredible season. They're 19-6. I mean, I'm all right with that after what they did last year. And especially if they can finish up strong. We'll find out what happens tonight. What did you have on the Padres? I don't pronounce this guy's name very well, so I'm going to let you do it, Scrape.
Oh,
news for
yes,
tomorrow.
Yes, hold on. Let me get the text so I'm delivering it correct.
Okay.
It is that Eric Kutsenda is going to speak with the media in Peoria tomorrow. We don't have a time yet, but we are going to have videos. Yes, Tony?
No, go ahead, finish.
Oh, we're going to have videos on our social medias as soon as it happens, so make sure you keep on 97.3 The Fan SD on Twitter, also Instagram, and Facebook.
Now, I know none of you guys have seen this yet, but it just came across my phone. Breaking news 6 minutes ago.
Is it good? Is it worthy of a sounder?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
Oh, this is Joe Mauer is not retiring.
Joe Mauer is not retiring, but someone has been disqualified for the Genesis Invitational for signing an incorrect scorecard.
Oh, my goodness.
Jordan Spieth has been disqualified from the Genesis Invitational for signing an incorrect scorecard.
Wow.
All right, first of all, that's an unforgivable mistake if you're a professional golfer. But second of all, this is the stupidest rule in sports.
That's why I brought it up.
Yeah.
It's not the stupidest rule in sports.
It is so.
No, it's not.
It is understandable in the 1920s and 30s when they were keeping score with, you know, pencils and, you know, little rickety pieces of
you
paper.
You literally have this on this but tournament on TV.
I mean, it's on television. Everybody knows everybody's score. That's ridiculous.
Here's
you
the mistake.
Don't think so, Scraby? Come on. Even you got to think that rule is a little outdated.
To be disqualified from the entire tournament, probably. But I do think there should be a penalty for writing down the wrong score. Cause
how bad was this?
So the mistake, this is from the article. The mistake came on par 3 fourth where Spieth signed for a par but actually made bogey.
Oh.
So
yeah.
You can't.
You can't.
But correct me if I'm wrong again, Scraby. Doesn't your playing partner actually keep your scorecard?
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm yes, there is something to that.
Okay,
but you have to write your own score.
So he just signed it. Like, yeah.
So you're keeping, but he looked at the guy who kept his scorecard. He looked at it. He said, yeah, this is good. That's doable, I think. I don't think that's out and out cheating.
So why would what is to stop you from consistently trying to sabotage somebody and just say, oh, he put out a birdie here.
I mean, golf is all about gentlemen.
Well, yes. Apparently, you know, you make a kind of a little mistake like that.
It's
you get
not a little mistake.
Disqualified for the whole tourney?
Yeah, that is a little crazy.
Still strong.
Give him like a 3-shot penalty on your overall score so far, and if it takes you out of the cut, it takes you out of the cut. But yeah, I mean,
let me see where was he? I'm trying Spieth? To find him on the.
He had a first round 66.
He's not even on the. Not only has he been kicked out of the tournament,
he's on the bottom. He's got to be on the bottom with like DQ next to his name.
There he is. Yeah, Jordan Spieth DQ, despite the fact that his score was 3 under par through 2 holes. Jordan Spieth is listed just underneath Tiger Woods, who has a WD next to his game.
I have a hot take?
Because he had to withdraw.
What is your hot take, Scraby?
I've been thinking this all week, but I didn't want to say it.
All week, okay. So it's not just today.
No, this is all week.
Here we go.
You had some thought to it then.
Yes.
Look at the court right now. It's on fire around the... Oh, my God. It's incredible.
We don't need to have a long discussion about this, but I think it's time for Tiger to stop playing.
I don't. Keep playing, Tiger.
Feel like he's just a distraction at this point?
A distraction. I bet you the PGA...
Distraction? How many people tuned in the last 2 days to watch him?
I bet you the PGA Tour does not feel
this. But how many people are going to stop tuning in when Tiger's on the course because he may not finish?
They're not. Nobody's
going to
stop tuning in.
You know when they stop tuning in? As soon as they find out he's not in the tournament.
I will agree with that. I will definitely agree with that.
He's 48 years old, Scraby. Mickelson won the PGA at 50. Tiger is not in the same physical shape as Mickelson was, and that's saying something because Mickelson was never in great shape. But Tiger's got so many injuries, but there is still no question that he's like a whole nother level above popularity of every other golfer.
Not to mention the dude hasn't played golf in like a year, it feels like. And he was even, well, it's 2 over today, I think, before the illness hitting. But
he was even through 17 yesterday. That's not a bad return to the game.
Okay, I shouldn't have mentioned this.
Yeah, bad
well,
take.
It's not. It's just,
a bad
it's
take.
Not correct. That's all.
I mean, people you can't call an opinion correct. By the way, but,
bad take.
It's in your mind a bad take
because, like,
take.
I like to watch.
I think most people would say
I
bad take.
I can't watch golf unless it's Scheffler or, you know, somebody I've heard of. You know,
I'm Charlie's not even watching golf anymore because
you're boycotting it right now.
I am.
But
well,
if
actually,
Tiger,
I did watch the
but Tiger, Tiger, I'll still watch.
Aren't you'll watch many... a guy limp around a golf course and hit bad shots?
Yes.
Why not?
Yes.
Okay.
Would you rather watch him or Patrick Cantlay, who's the leader?
Patrick Cantlay.
You really would.
You would not.
You would follow Patrick Cantlay for 18 holes and watch it
18 holes now.
Okay, no. 9. You watch him on the first front 9.
I will watch TV and the regular broadcast.
So your answer is no. You wouldn't follow. And
Scraby, my question to you is this. If Patrick Cantlay walked into the studio right now.
Yes, I would notice
him. You would not.
Yes, I know what he looks like.
You'd go, hey, Patrick.
He won a FedEx Cup.
I don't care what he won. Nobody knows that.
Is that him?
Yes, that's him.
is that him?
He has a really
So
the reason
he's from Long Beach, Tony, might have gone to your
LB?
You might have gone to your high school.
You remember there was a girl who, well, I can't say her name on the radio, but her cousin is Patrick Cantlay. She used to work here.
Why can't you say her name on the radio?
Because I don't want to
say her first name.
Shannon, remember Shannon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, her cousin is Patrick Cantlay. She was like one time, I guess I have a famous cousin who's like a pro golfer or something. And I was like, oh, yeah, what's his name?
Or something.
She's like, Patrick Cantlay. And I'm like, oh, never mind. He's actually a real golfer.
Never mind, Tony. Went to Servite High School.
Servite?
In Anaheim.
That's Anaheim.
Isn't that in Anaheim?
Yeah.
Oh, but he's a Long Beach native. So there you go.
Boom.
Went to UCLA. So he's a Southern California guy.
Yep.
Never, could not recognize him, like I said, if he walked in.
How long has he been on the tour?
He's got
7 or 8 years.
So he's probably played, was at school with Bauer and...
Oh, Garrett Cole?
And Cole.
We'll have to look that up, but maybe.
Check that out.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right.
All right, let's get the break.
Yeah, please. We got Joe Musgrove on the other side for our interview of the week.
I'm right currently scouting some of my possible celebrity softball
game how about coming that? Up. You got some of your softball players are at the celebrity all-star game in the NBA.
Yeah, Kelsey Plum is not playing in the celebrity basketball game.
Well, you don't want her playing in this game. She could get hurt.
That's what I was getting to. I kind of called ahead and said, hey, take it easy. I don't want... I'm going to need you, 100% by the time we get ready
now,
to...
Now, the list of softball players that we, you know, that are going to be in the Padre Fan Fest softball game, which is a good list. I'm telling you, if you're going to the Fan Fest, you want to go to the softball game. But we don't know that all these players are on your team.
No, we don't. But, you know, it doesn't hurt for me to start my scouting now.
Okay.
Talked to Coach yesterday.
Now, who was your other coach? Do you remember?
I am coaching against Mr. Hoffman.
Trevor?
Yes.
I think you guys ought to have a little draft. I think that'd be kind of fun.
I think that'd be fair.
Yeah.
You at any point in time are you going to try and distract Mr. Hoffman with your hit against him? Like you're going to bring it up or put a picture?
No. I have far too much respect for that man.
You know,
his face in my little hit against him.
Yeah. you and I had a chance maybe. Here was my suggestion. Since Tony won't take us on his team, maybe you could call Trevor and we could take him. He could get us on his team.
This is a
But now you're bad-mouthing him by reminding him of Tony's hit.
Well, here's the thing.
Thanks a lot.
If Trevor decides to let you in, then I'm going to change my mind. I can't have you guys on the field and that be on my team. So
I see.
You know how that works there?
I don't see us having any chance.
I just don't think I can't get you guys on the team. But if you guys find your way on the list, I'm taking you guys.
If you said to them, I would like for Scraby and Tony or Scraby and Chris to be a part of this game, I think they would say yes.
I think we're begging far too much, honestly.
I think
we're putting Tony in a really awkward spot.
I think we need to get to Joe Musgrove, is what I think.
Yes, we do.
There's some traffic, and there's Joe coming up after. Joining us is San Diego's favorite, I think. Joe Musgrove joins us here on Gwen and Chris. Joe, first, man, how are you? How's the beginning of spring training? It all starts again.
It's been good, man. To be honest, the biggest bummer for me leaving San Diego is not having the San Diego radio anymore, man. I became a big fan of your show and the morning broadcast, so I'm missing 97.3, actually.
Come on now, you can still go online, watch us on YouTube.
Yeah, I
expect.
I got to put a little more work in.
Yeah, you got to put a little work in.
Joe, I mean, this was a little bit different off season for you, man. You had to get the body in order before, I'm assuming, starting your progression to get to this point. How are you feeling? And what was different about this off season compared to past off seasons?
Yeah, a lot of things. I mean, first off, I had a little more time. Starting the off season a little bit sooner. One, because obviously not making the playoffs, you wrap up at the start of October. But the last month and a half of the season for me was spent on the IL, and we were back and forth between trying to build back up or just shutting down and starting the off season. Our place in the rankings was kind of dictating a lot of that, and going 16-2 down the stretch kind of put a little pressure on us to speed things up a little bit. Should we make it in, I wanted to have a chance to throw. So a little bit of that, but, ultimately I got to start some of the off-season, recovery work and stuff down that last you know, month of the season or so last year. So going into the start of the official off season, I was actually in a pretty decent spot. But yeah, like you said, a lot more body work and maintenance stuff to kind of get me back to a level playing field before I go into the off season and start to build back up. So I can honestly say that, you know, this past week has been the best that I felt all off season, and I feel like I'm starting to peak at the right times here.
Do you still have to prove anything to yourself and to or this, you know, the team, the coaches, that, you know, what's going to let them know, let you know that you are going to be ready to go 100% on opening day?
Yeah, you know, I've got my check boxes that I like to hit, you know, along the way in the course of spring training. But, you know, you really try to just set your sights on one at a time. And for me, it's a daily thing, you know, just try to get your body feeling good by the end of each day and leaving there feeling like they'd be ready to come in the next day. So, like I said, I have these few things that I like to hit along the way, but I'm really trying to take it day at a time and just, you know, follow what the trainers and our PT staff have given me.
Joe Musgrove joins us, one of the lead dogs in this rotation at the Padres. We'll go into the 2024 season with it. And Joe, I'm interested to hear your take on this. I know when pitchers and catchers reported, you had your kind of scrum with the media, and you spoke about establishing an identity. As a starting pitcher on this ball club, what is your part in creating that identity? And, you know, how long does it take for a team to kind of figure out what their identity is going to be?
I think ultimately you find it through playing and through winning. But, you know, setting the tone early in camp with the expectations of how we're going to carry ourselves as a staff. I mean, me and Ruben have this talk a lot, but we're firm believers that starting rotation sets the tone for everything. You know, we got the ball. We control the pace of the game. You know, we're in control out there. So, you know, we want to be known as a relentless staff, you know, somebody that's not going to give in regardless of the scenario, regardless of the score. You know, if you got the ball and you're on that mound, you're giving it everything you have until they take it from you. You know, so some of those things are talked about a little bit as far as what we expect and the effort level that's going into things. But a lot of the culture and stuff that everyone talks about, you know, that stuff is found through winning and through experiences you have throughout the course of the season. But, you know, it's never too early to start implementing some of those things and just talking out loud about some of the, you know, some of the approaches that you want to take towards your game and how you want your team to look on the field.
Joe, we obviously follow everything that happens during the off season. The fans follow it closely, but they're not as probably as big of fans as the actual players that are on the team. I mean, you're certainly reading and following everything that's happening, and Juan Soto's traded, and a bunch of guys are coming in, and free agency this year is a little different than last year. What's your overall reaction to what the Padres have done so far this off season, and how do you think it's all going to benefit this year's club?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's never easy losing a generational talent type player in Soto, but you know, you look at the pieces we get in return for him and what it does for our team moving forward. I think it puts us in a better spot, you know, as a group and as a team. You know, with the arms we got in return, pitching was going to be the biggest concern going into the off season for us. You know, so we answered a lot of those questions with some of the arms we got back. You know, we got a little bit of experience. And then some really good, talented young arms that we expect to be big pieces for us. So, like I said, it's not easy to lose guys like Soto and a guy as consistent as Grish is in the outfield. But when you look at what it does for our team and our rotation, I think it puts us in a real good spot. We got some really good depth in our bullpen now. You know, still a few pieces that I think we're short on. But, you know, I know AJ and you guys know him well. You know, he's always got something up his sleeve. And I know he's not walking into this thing knowing that there's gaps in the, you know, in the roster that need to be filled without a plan. So I think we just kind of trust in him.
Joe, I want to ask you a little bit about the managerial change. Mike Shildt takes over. And let me say this before I ask this question. By no means am I trying to say that Bo Mel didn't do these things, but just in my time getting to spend with Mike Shildt, he seems very detail-oriented. He seems very driven by the team aspect in terms of how you guys feel about one another and kind of coming together. Are you sensing that already in just a little bit of spring training you've had already?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, he empowers the players too. I mean, he's got a way of talking to you that, you know, inspires you and motivates you to do a little more on your end. as a player. So, you know, I got to spend the last 2 years with him, you know, side by side in the dugout, just talking baseball and, you know, gaining some knowledge from him. I mean, he's been around the game since he was 9, 10 years old, growing up in, you know, double A clubhouse, coaching at every single level along the way. I mean, the guy's got as much experience as you could ask for in a manager. But yeah, he does a really good job communicating with the guys and making it very clear what the expectations are. And then, you know, putting the power in the hands of the players and, you know, forcing us to take a little bit of accountability and a little bit of ownership of what we're doing and try to police things and run things ourselves from within.
As you do a little look back at the 2023 season, as you're sitting there getting ready for this year, and you compare what ended up happening last year to what happened the year before, is it as simple as saying that you guys just couldn't get over the hump in terms of getting hits with runners in scoring position and winning close games? I mean, the record was 9-23 in one-run games. It was the complete opposite of that the year before. Is it as simple as that to say last year didn't work out because of those things, or was there more at work here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is one of Shilty's big things that he says all the time, and he said it countless times since he's, you know, taken the helm here. It's that, you know, this game is, you know, the best players in this game are elite adjusters. And, you know, we just really weren't that last year. You know, we had plans of how we wanted to go about it. We knew, you know, what the expectation was of ourselves as a lineup, how we were going to score runs, how we were going to produce. And we weren't getting those, you know, we weren't having that success with driving the ball in and, you know, the doubles and homers and our slug not being very high, the runners in scoring position average, you know, those things weren't falling into place for us early in the year. And we did a good job of adjusting the game plan and doing what we had to do to win. I feel like we married ourselves to that expectation of what our lineup was built to do, and you know, we didn't adjust very well. So you'd like to say it's as easy as that, but I feel like that's the main reason, is we did not adjust on the fly, and we weren't in that category of elite adjusters like, you know, you see at this level.
You said that word twice and I got goosebumps. Elite adjusters. I mean, that is as simple as it, I think you can put it. You mentioned some of the arms that you guys got back in the deal. For Juan Soto, Michael King, we're talking Brito, we're talking Vasquez, we're talking a young kid, Thorpe. Integrating those arms, because, you know, as of right now, at least a few of those guys are going to be pieces that, you know, could possibly be in this rotation. How do you bring those guys in? I think this is your strong suit, and you're not the only one. Yu Darvish does it in his own way as well, but talk about bringing in those young guys, installing that confidence, installing that kind of the idea of what you guys want to accomplish as a unit.
Yeah, I think our little off-season camp that we do every year in January is a big part of that. You know, bringing these new guys in and some of these young guys, and giving them a week prior to spring training to meet the staff, to meet some of the other players, to, you know, see what the expectation is, how we do things here, meet some of the behind-the-scenes guys with the analytics, and just kind of kickstart things and give these guys a week to kind of adjust to some of the people and, you know, get their feet underneath them before they get here. But, you know, we talked about it a lot this offseason, myself, Manny, Toddy, Darvish, all these guys that are, you know, under contract and going to be here for a while, that, you know, we have a lot of young guys now, and we're going to need these guys to produce. And I think for them to be the best player that they can be, they have to be comfortable. They got to be able to play with that swagger and with a little bit of attitude and personality. And I think a lot of that comes from the veterans on the team creating that atmosphere. You know, they got to understand that we're here to win games. You know, we're not here to make them feel like rookies. We're not here to belittle them or make them feel like they're anything less than we are. You know, we're here to win. So having said that, there are, you know, there is a pecking order and there are some unwritten rules that you try to follow. And it's really just respect, you know, respect the guys around you, respect the guys that have more time than you in the game, but be yourself, you know, play the game the way that you play it, play with some passion, with some fire. And, you know, if your mind's in the right place with everything you do, you know, everyone in that clubhouse is going to have your back. So just bringing them in and trying to get them to understand that, hey, we're not here to embarrass you guys or belittle you or make you feel like a rookie. We want you to be impact players on this team, and we need you to be at your best and play with some, you know, some freedom out there.
How many people have come up to you and guys on this team and said, man, you guys are really up against it? I mean, look what the Dodgers did this offseason, and I mean, they're going to be impossible to beat and all of this stuff. And you know in your heart that it doesn't come down to that. It comes down to execution and Being adjust, doing adjust. What did he say?
Elite adjusting.
Thank you. Being an elite adjuster. Right. Yes, I'm going to put that in my bank of
bookmark that one.
Bookmark that one. But you know, those are the things that are going to decide this season. And if you can perform, you know, this Padre team performs the way it can. I don't see why you can't keep up with the Dodgers. I know you guys aren't going into the season thinking anything but that.
Yeah, I mean, we've been on that side. We were that team last year. Yeah. Where everyone looked at our team on paper and saw who we were and what was expected of us, and that's not always the best thing for you. Sometimes to have a little chip on your shoulder and to be counted out a little bit adds a little fuel to the fire. So, like you said, you know, this team is capable of beating any team in the big leagues, you know, when we play the way that we expect to play. So it's about finding out the way to pull that out of us every night, you know. Finding ways to create that energy and to kickstart things in the beginning of the year better than we did last year. And I think a lot of that starts in spring training with, you know, some of these meetings and talking about, you know, what we expect of ourselves and how we're going to run things on a daily basis to ultimately get to the end goal. But all that stuff starts now. So, you know, just building that foundation in spring is super important.
Joe, I got one that's not as serious as all these other questions has been. You know, typically for position players, you know, about 3.5 weeks in, you're like, all right, I'm ready for this to go. Now, pitchers is different, especially because you're building up. But is there any part of you that is, by the time you get to spring, is like, let's just get to the real stuff, please?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very soon, actually. sooner than later in spring. Yeah, for starters, it's usually once you're into that 4 or 5 inning range where you start feeling like, okay, I'm built up now, I'm ready to go. Early in camp, you're still trying to get your feet under you. A lot of guys haven't even been in spikes for, you know, as long as you spend in them in spring training, running around doing PFPs and, you know, conditioning in spikes. There's a lot of things and just getting your body prepped and stuff. But you get through that first week or two, you start to feel really consistent in your routine, your body's recovering well, and you start getting the itch for some real games. But it's nice for us this year. You know, we come into spring a week early, you know, get things started when most people aren't working, and get to get out of here a few weeks early, which is nice as well. So we got to really maximize, you know, the time that we got here and get as much out of it as we can, because Korea is going to come, you know, faster than we know it.
Is there any chance you think you could pitch in Korea? I know you're, again, you said you're taking it one checkbox at a time. Could we see you in one of those first two games?
Yeah, so we've talked about that already. With Schulte and Ruben about how we want to go about it. No decisions have been made yet, but, you know, that's definitely, those are two games that, you know, count towards the record book. So, you know, we expect to be around that 5-inning mark by then. So me and Darvish would both be ready to go should, you know, the ball be handed to us in that situation.
Say less. I think that's the answer that everybody wanted to hear anyway. Joe, we appreciate you coming off, man, on a day off. Schulte gave you guys...
Joe Musgrove, love catching up with my man. He is he's one of the best, man.
And he's pitching in Korea, looks like. He always slips us a little news.
He gave us a little tidbit there.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here. The weekend, hopefully, I get to see you guys again on Monday. My daughter in Mount Carmel...
We're not going to see you on Monday, no matter what.
Yeah, it's Tuesday. Hopefully you'll see me on Tuesday.
We're back.
To the Mount Carmel Sun Devils get a win.
Joining us is San Diego's favorite, I think. Joe Musgrove joins us here on Gwen and Chris. Joe, first, man, how are you? How's the beginning of spring training? It all starts again.
Been good, man. To be honest, the biggest bummer for me leaving San Diego is not having the San Diego radio anymore, man. I became a big fan of your show and the morning broadcast, so you know, I'm missing 97.3, actually.
Come on now, you can still go online, watch us on YouTube.
Yeah,
I expect.
I got to put a little more work in here.
Yeah, you got to put a little work in.
Joe, I mean, this was a little bit different off season for you, man. You had to get the body in order before, I'm assuming, starting your progression to get to this point. How are you feeling? And what was different about this offseason compared to past off seasons?
Yeah, a lot of things. I mean, first off, I had a little more time, you know, starting the offseason a little bit sooner. One, because, you know, obviously not making the playoffs, you wrap up at the start of October. But, you know, the last month and a half of the season for me was spent on the IL, and, you know, we were back and forth between trying to build back up or just shutting down and starting the off season. You know, our place in the rankings was kind of dictating a lot of that, and going 16-2 down the stretch kind of put a little pressure on us to speed things up a little bit. Should we make it in, you know, I wanted to have a chance to throw. So a little bit of that, but, you know, ultimately I got to start some of the off-season, you know, recovery work and stuff down that last, you know, month of the season or so last year. So going into the start of the official off-season, I was actually in a pretty decent spot. But, yeah, like you said, a lot more body work and maintenance stuff to kind of get me back to a level playing field before I go into the off-season and start to build back up. So I can honestly say that, you know, this past week has been the best that I felt all off-season, and I feel like I'm starting to peak at the right times here.
Do you still have to prove anything to yourself and to or this, you know, the team, the coaches that, you know, and what's going to let them know, let you know that you are going to be ready to go 100% on opening day?
Yeah, you know, I've got my check boxes that I like to hit, you know, along the way in the course of spring training. But, you know, you really try to just set your sights on one at a time. And for me, it's a daily thing, you know, just try to get your body feeling good by the end of each day and leaving there feeling like they'll be ready to come in the next day. So, like I said, I have these few things that I like to hit along the way, but I'm really trying to take it day at a time and just, you know, follow what the trainers and our PT staff have given me.
Joe Musgrove joins us, one of the lead dogs in this rotation at the Padres. We'll go into the 2024 season with it. And, Joe, I'm interested to hear your take on this. I know when pitchers and catchers reported, you had your kind of scrum with the media, and you spoke about establishing an identity. As a starting pitcher on this ball club, what is your part in creating that identity? And, you know, how long does it take for a team to kind of figure out what their identity is going to be?
I think ultimately you find it through playing and through winning. But, you know, setting the tone early in camp with the expectations of how we're going to carry ourselves as a staff. I mean, me and Ruben have this talk a lot, but we're firm believers that starting rotation sets the tone for everything. You know, we got the ball. We control the pace of the game. You know, we're in control out there. So, you know, we want to be known as a relentless staff, you know, somebody that's not going to give in regardless of the scenario, regardless of the score. You know, if you got the ball and you're on that mound, you're giving it everything you have until they take it from you. You know, so some of those things are talked about a little bit as far as what we expect and the effort level that's going into things. But a lot of the culture and stuff that everyone talks about, you know, that stuff is found through winning and through experiences you have throughout the course of the season. But, you know, it's never too early to start implementing some of those things and just talking out loud about some of the, you know, some of the approaches that you want to take towards your game and how you want your team to look on the field.
Joe, we obviously follow everything that happens during the off season. The fans follow it closely, but they're not probably as big of fans as the actual players that are on the team. I mean, you're certainly reading and following everything that's happening, and Juan Soto's traded, and a bunch of guys are coming in, and free agency this year is a little different than last year. What's your overall reaction to what the Padres have done so far this off season, and how do you think it's all going to benefit this year's club?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's never easy losing a generational talent type player in Soto, but, you know, you look at the pieces we get in return for him and what it does for our team moving forward. I think it puts us in a better spot, you know, as a group and as a team, you know, with the arms we got in return. Pitching was going to be the biggest concern going into the offseason for us. You know, so we answered a lot of those questions with some of the arms we got back. You know, we got a little bit of experience. And then some really good, talented young arms that we expect to be big pieces for us. So, like I said, it's not easy to lose guys like Soto and a guy as consistent as Grish is in the outfield. But when you look at what it does for our team and our rotation, I think it puts us in a real good spot. We got some really good depth in our bullpen now. You know, still a few pieces that I think we're short on. But, you know, I know AJ and you guys know him well. You know, he's always got something up his sleeve. And I know he's not walking into this thing knowing that there's gaps in the, you know, in the roster that need to be filled without a plan. So I think we just kind of trust in him.
Joe, I want to ask you a little bit about the managerial change. Mike Shildt takes over. And let me say this before I ask this question. By no means am I trying to say that Bo Mel didn't do these things. But just in my time getting to spend with Mike Shildt, he seems very detail-oriented. He seems very driven by the team aspect in terms of how you guys feel about one another and kind of coming together. Are you sensing that already in just a little bit of spring training you've had already?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, he empowers the players, too. I mean, he's got a way, and he's got a way of talking to you that, you know, inspires you and motivates you to do a little more on your end as a player. So, you know, I got to spend the last 2 years with him, you know, side by side in the dugout, just talking baseball and, you know, gaining some knowledge from him. I mean, he's been around the game since he was 9, 10 years old, growing up in, you know, double A clubhouse, coaching at every single level along the way. I mean, the guy's got as much experience as you could ask for in a manager. But yeah, he does a really good job communicating with the guys and making it very clear what the expectations are, and then, you know, putting the power in the hands of the players and, you know, forcing us to take a little bit of accountability and a little bit of ownership of what we're doing and try to police things and run things ourselves from within.
As you do a little look back at the 2023 season as you're sitting there getting ready for this year, and you compare what ended up happening last year to what happened the year before, is it as simple as saying that you guys just couldn't get over the hump in terms of getting hits with runners in scoring position and winning close games? I mean, the record was 9-23 in one-run games. It was the complete opposite of that the year before. Is it as simple as that to say last year didn't work out because of those things, or was there more at work here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is one of Shilty's big things that he says all the time, and he said it countless times since he's, you know, taken the helm here. It's that, you know, this game is, you know, the best players in this game are elite adjusters. And, you know, we just really weren't that last year. You know, we had plans of how we wanted to go about it. We knew, you know, what the expectation was of ourselves as a lineup, how we were going to score runs, how we were going to produce. And we weren't getting those, you know, we weren't having that success with driving the ball in and, you know, the doubles and homers and our slug not being very high, the runners in scoring position average, you know, those things weren't falling into place for us early in the year. And we did a good job of adjusting the game plan and doing what we had to do to win. I feel like we married ourselves to that expectation of what our lineup was built to do. And, you know, we didn't adjust very well. So you'd like to say it's as easy as that, but I feel like that's the main reason is we did not adjust on the fly, and we weren't in that category of elite adjusters like, you know, you see at this level.
You said that word twice, and I got goosebumps. Elite adjusters. I mean, that is as simple as it, I think you can put it. You mentioned some of the arms that you guys got back in the deal for Juan Soto. Michael King, we're talking Brito, we're talking Vasquez, we're talking a young kid, Thorpe. Integrating those arms, because, you know, as of right now, at least a few of those guys are going to be pieces that, you know, could possibly be in this rotation. How do you bring those guys in? I think this is your strong suit, and you're not the only one. You, Darvish, does it in his own way as well. But talk about bringing in those young guys, installing that confidence, installing that kind of the idea of what you guys want to accomplish as a unit.
Yeah. I think our little off-season camp that we do every year in January is a big part of that, you know, bringing these new guys in and some of these young guys and giving them a week prior to spring training to meet the staff, to meet some of the other players, to, you know, see what the expectation is, how we do things here, meet some of the behind-the-scenes guys with the analytics and just kind of kickstart things and give these guys a week to kind of adjust to some of the people and, you know, get their feet underneath them before they get here. But, you know, we talked about it a lot this offseason, myself, Manny, Toddy, Darvish, all these guys that are, you know, under contract and going to be here for a while, that, you know, we have a lot of young guys now and we're going to need these guys to produce. And I think for them to be the best player that they can be, they have to be comfortable. They got to be able to play with that swagger and with a little bit of attitude and personality. And I think a lot of that comes from the veterans on the team creating that atmosphere, you know, they got to understand that we're here to win games. You know, we're not here to make them feel like rookies. We're not here to belittle them or make them feel like they're anything less than we are. You know, we're here to win. So having said that, there is a pecking order and there are some unwritten rules that you try to follow. And it's really just respect, you know, respect the guys around you, respect the guys that have more time than you in the game, but be yourself, you know, play the game the way that you play it, play with some passion, with some fire. And, you know, if your mind's in the right place with everything you do, you know, everyone in that clubhouse is going to have your back. So just bringing them in and trying to get them to understand that, hey, we're not here to embarrass you guys or belittle you or make you feel like a rookie. We want you to be impact players on this team, and we need you to be at your best and play with some, you know, some freedom out there.
How many people have come up to you and guys on this team and said, man, you guys are really up against it? I mean, look what the Dodgers did this offseason. And I mean, they're going to be impossible to beat and all of this stuff. And you know in your heart that it doesn't come down to that. It comes down to execution and being what did he say?
Elite adjusting.
Thank you. Being an elite adjuster. Right. Yes, I'm going to put that in my bank of...
Bookmark that one.
But, you know, those are the things that are going to decide the season. And if you can perform, you know, this Padre team performs the way it can, I don't see why you can't keep up with the Dodgers. I know you guys aren't going into the season thinking anything but that.
Yeah, I mean, we've been on that side. We were that team last year. Yeah. Everyone looked at our team on paper and saw who we were and what was expected of us, and that's not always the best thing for you. Sometimes to have a little chip on your shoulder and to be counted out a little bit adds a little fuel to the fire. So, like you said, you know, this team is capable of beating any team in the big leagues, you know, when we play the way that we expect to play. So it's about finding out the way to pull that out of us every night, you know. Finding ways to create that energy and to kickstart things in the beginning of the year better than we did last year. And I think a lot of that starts in spring training with, you know, some of these meetings and talking about, you know, what we expect of ourselves and how we're going to run things on a daily basis to ultimately get to the end goal. But all that stuff starts now. So, you know, just building that foundation in spring is super important.
Joe, I got one that's not as serious as all these other questions has been. You know, mm-hmm. Typically for position players, you know, about 3.5 weeks in, you're like, all right, I'm ready for this to go. Now, pitchers is different, especially because you're building up. But is there any part of you that is, by the time you get to spring, is like, let's just get to the real stuff, please?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very soon, actually. sooner than later in spring. For starters, it's usually once you're into that 4 or 5 inning range where you start feeling like, okay, I'm built up now, I'm ready to go. Early in camp, you're still trying to get your feet under you. A lot of guys haven't even been in spikes for, you know, as long as you spend in them in spring training, running around doing PFPs and, you know, conditioning in spikes. There's a lot of things and just getting your body prepped and stuff. But you get through that first week or two, you start to feel really consistent in your routine, your body's recovering well, and you start getting the itch for some real games. But it's nice for us this year. You know, we come into spring a week early, you know, get things started when most people aren't working, and get to get out of here a few weeks early, which is nice as well. So we got to really maximize, you know, the time that we got here and get as much out of it as we can, because Korea is going to come, you know, faster than we know it.
Is there any chance you think you could pitch in Korea? I know you said you're taking it one checkbox at a time. Could we see you in one of those first two games?
Yeah, so we've talked about that already. With Shilty and Ruben about how we want to go about it. No decisions have been made yet, but, you know, that's definitely, those are two games that, you know, count towards the record book. So, you know, we expect to be around that 5-inning mark by then. So me and Darvish would both be ready to go should, you know, the ball be handed to us in that situation.
Say less. I think that's the answer that everybody wanted to hear anyway. Joe, we appreciate you coming off, man, on a day off. Shilty gave you guys... Joe Musgrove, love catching up with my man. He is he's one of the best, man.
And he's pitching in Korea, looks like. He always slips us a little news.
He gave us a little tidbit there.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here. The weekend, hopefully, I get to see you guys again on Monday. If my daughter in Mount Carmel...
We're not going to see you on Monday, no matter what.
Yeah, it's Tuesday. Hopefully you'll see me on Tuesday.
We're back.
To the Mount Carmel Sun Devils get a win. We got to get out of here. You guys enjoying your weekend. Scravy Chronicles up next.
Our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide cleans better than the leading competitive free detergent, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues.
Plus, Tide Free and Gentle has no dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on her skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.